Despite an agreement reached in Geneva between Ukraine, Russia, the U.S., and the European Union on April 17th, calling for all illegal groups to disarm and evacuate occupied government buildings in eastern Ukraine, recent violence has undermined the accord. On Easter Sunday, just 3 days after negotiations were concluded in Geneva, three people were reported killed in an armed attack on an eastern Ukraine checkpoint manned by activists opposed to the provisional government in Kiev. Local pro-Russian groups in Moscow say the attackers were from Right Sector, the neo-fascist group who were in the vanguard of street fighters that overthrew Ukraine's elected president, Viktor Yanukovych, 2 months ago. Before Yanukovych fled to Russia in February, he was the target of 4 months of militant protests in Kiev, opposing his government's decision to reject an economic agreement with the European Union. Ukraine is now in economic freefall, owing to its large debt and reliance on Russian energy. On an April 22nd visit to Kiev, U.S. Vice President Joe Biden pledged $50 million in U.S. aid to Ukraine as the nation awaits a $27 billion bailout from the International Monetary Fund. Biden called on Russia to withdraw 40,000 troops NATO says are massed along the Ukrainian border and warned of more sanctions if Moscow moved to annex Russian-speaking sections of eastern Ukraine as it did in Crimea. Your reporter spoke with John Quigley, Professor Emeritus of International Law at Ohio State University, who discusses the escalating crisis in Ukraine, the threat of civil war, Russian intervention, and a new Cold War.
Well, there is an article in the New York Times, and the writer of it claims to have a good reading on the Obama administration and says that the Obama administration has decided to write off Mr. Putin, is the way they put it. Whether that's accurate or not as a characterization of Mr. Obama's position, I don't know. He would probably deny that. But it does seem that we could be moving in that direction, which I think at this point is much more difficult than it would have been, you know, back in the Cold War, if we were still in the same kind of relationship with Russia that we had then. Because we have, collaboration on the space station. You know, we can't send anything into space without the Russians. We're working with the Russians on Syria and the chemical weapons. And there are all kinds of things that we do now. They're being very helpful in letting us get supplies in through their territory to go to Afghanistan even. Just pulling the plug on relations with Russia would be something that would be very counterproductive for the United States in many ways. And it seems to me it would behoove the United States to try to work this whole situation out in a way that doesn't overly challenge or threaten Putin. And it seems to me that the sanctions route is inappropriate.
Could there be a deal struck, you think, that would have Ukraine forego membership in NATO for the foreseeable future? Would that reduce tensions between Russia and the government in Kiev?
I think that probably would be helpful. I mean, if the NATO countries just said we're not going to push for membership for Ukraine, I mean, we've seen how risky that could be, in particular for the United States. I mean, if Ukraine had been a member of NATO a few months ago, we would have had a legal obligation, at least the way we were reading Russia's actions, we would have had a legal obligation to go in and protect Ukraine. At least Ukraine would have said we had a legal obligation. They tried that with respect to the so-called Budapest Agreement, but the Budapest Agreement isn't quite as hard and fast as the NATO treaty as a source of legal obligation to defend Ukraine.
I wanted to ask you about the economic situation in Ukraine. From what I understand, Ukraine is an economic basket case. The Russians had pumped a lot of direct aid into Ukraine through the years and energy subsidies. Now it looks like with this pro-European government in Kiev, the United States and EU will be responsible for helping bail out Ukraine at this point. But is there some kind of possibility that Russia and EU and the United States could work together to help Ukraine and reduce the polarization in that way? In terms of Ukraine's economics, it looks like whoever's going to be the sole ally there is going to be left holding the bag in terms of pumping billions of dollars into the economy there.
Exactly. I mean, for the West, Ukraine is no prize. It's like having another Greece that needs to be given something to survive. The economic connections between Ukraine and Russia are very, very strong. A lot of the major production that Russia relies on actually comes from Ukraine, and Ukraine purchases a lot from Russia. It really isn't realistic to have an economic divorce between Ukraine and Russia. It would not be good for anybody. And clearly the West is not willing to give money to Ukraine at no cost. They're demanding quite a lot, and the Ukraine government has already been forced to increase fuel prices to the population. So we know that there can be a lot of hardship in Ukraine if something isn't worked out.
Well, any observations that you'd like to generally make about the situation there, things that are not being discussed in depth here in this country, given the tensions that we've seen rise over the recent months? And anything you'd like to throw in the mix that's not really there now?
Oh, yes, perhaps with regard to Crimea. It seems to me that it would behoove the West to indicate that that the vote that was taken in Crimea did reflect the opinion of the population there, and to back off pressuring Russia with respect to Crimea. That may already have happened in a de facto sense. This joint statement that was issued in Geneva does not mention Crimea, even though it mentions a great deal about constitutional reform domestically within Ukraine. And the fact that it is silent on Crimea really speaks volumes. But I would like to see some more attention on Crimea, in particular because there's an indigenous minority group there, the Tatars, who are very much against this project of Crimea going back to being in Russia. And they are fearful that their rights will be violated in Crimea. And I would like to see the Organization for Security and Cooperation focusing on their situation. I, in fact, worked with the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe in Crimea 20 years ago, and one of the things that we were focusing on at that time was the situation of the Tatars, and I think they need to be given some assurances that they're not going to be disadvantaged.
That was John Quigley, Professor Emeritus of International Law at Ohio State University. For more analysis and commentary on the situation in Ukraine, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.